Hey everybody, I'm Andy Griffiths and I've been coming to this church for just over 20 years, which is a long time. I know I don't look old enough. When I first came, Simon Brindley was in shorts, actually. But today, this Freedom Sunday, it's my pleasure to be able to talk to you about International Justice Mission, or IJM, who I work for and who are one of the mission partners of the parish. Firstly, I just want to say a huge thank you to the parish of St. Saviour's and also St. Paul's for supporting IJM so faithfully over the years. It's just it's incredible that you do, and we're really, really grateful that you do. Rachel, my wife here, and I only have one wife, she's here. She and I first joined IJM in 2011 when we moved as a family to Chennai, India, South India, to allow me to take on work leading an office there combating bonded labour slavery in Tamil Nadu, which is in South India. So we returned to the UK in 2014, and since then, I'm now leading IJM's work across Africa and Europe, which is a real honour to do that. I wanted to start this morning just by explaining a little bit about what IJM actually does. And then after that, we'll tell you a story as a little bit of a double act between us. So it is two for the price of one Sunday. So what is the problem that IJM is actually addressing? Well, the root of the problem is really this, that there are 5 billion people across the world today who live outside of the protection of the law. Now, if you live outside of the protection of the law, then that means that you can't call 999 for police when someone is attacking you or your family. And if you have no money to pay for private security, that makes you vulnerable. There's no one to protect you. If there's no one to protect you, then someone who is more powerful than you can abuse you, can afflict you, can exploit you, oppress you. So that is the situation for these 5 billion people who have no protection from everyday violence and exploitation. And what we've seen at IJM is that in that context, when violent crimes go unpunished, then criminals, slave masters, paedophiles, wife murderers, and others can act with impunity. If you're not going to be held accountable for something, and you know you won't be held accountable for it, then you may continue to do appalling, violent things to people who are not protected. And so this is what we see in our work at IJM. It's estimated today that there are 50 million people in slavery, 15 million of them in India, in bonded labour slavery. There are people engaged in child slavery in the fishing industries and in cocoa in Ghana, for example, endemic levels of child sexual assault in Uganda and in Guatemala, women who are trafficked into forced sexual exploitation from Central and Eastern Europe into the UK and into Western Europe. There are children in the Philippines who are sexually abused online to please paedophiles living in the US and in Europe. There's indiscriminate killing of Kenyan ordinary citizens by a minority of violent Kenyan police. That average is about 150 per year over the last 5 years. So all of these things are plainly illegal, but they happen when governments are just not effectively enforcing the law to protect people. IJM is a global organization which was formed to address really that fundamental problem, to try to strengthen public justice systems to the point where they protect vulnerable people who live in those countries. Our aim is to protect 500 million people who live in poverty from violence by 2030, so that's our global aim. So here's where we're working, quick map. And we're working in these countries, I'm not going to go through them all, against slavery, violence against women, and police abuse of power. So those are our three kind of core areas of work. Wherever we work, we're trying to do the same thing, which is to strengthen public justice systems to the point where they enforce the law to protect vulnerable people. And we do that by finding individual cases, by working with the police to then find men, women, children who are trapped in violent exploitation and to bring them to safety. We're empowering those survivors then on a journey of restoration to a place where actually they can build a sustainable future for themselves. This is really important for the survivor But it's actually also important for the justice system, because these survivors are almost always the key witnesses in the violent crime that was done to them. And so we support police and prosecutors to come alongside survivors to work together to hold criminals accountable. And that's important because it acts as a deterrent then to other would-be criminals. So here's what we've seen today, and we really give thanks for these things. There have been over 85,000 people who have been brought to slavery, brought to safety through IJM's work. 5,700 traffickers and perpetrators of violence have been convicted. 347,000 officials and community members who have been trained in how to spot and respond to violent situations. What we've seen is that, next slide. What we've seen is that when you strengthen public justice systems in this way, it does actually work to protect vulnerable people who are there. There are 9 places where we have now commissioned what we call endline studies, and those show significant reductions in the prevalence of the violent crime that we were addressing in those places. And so, for example, here in Tamil Nadu, most recently where I used to work, where we were living, in a study last year, we saw that there was an 82% reduction in bonded labor slavery across the state. That equates to 380,000 people who've actually moved from being in slavery into freedom over the last 8 years between a baseline and an end line by strengthening the public justice system in that state. So it really does work. I want to move on, though, from talking at this sort of more high level to telling you a story. And this story has been unfolding over a number of years now. Back in 2015, this man, who is a motorcycle driver or a Boda Boda driver, as they're called locally, he's called Josephat Mwenda. He was stopped by a police officer who shot him in the hand. That officer was this man, Frederick Lelyman. Frederick Lelyman immediately tried to cover up what he'd done by taking Josephat to a private hospital rather than a government hospital so the public wouldn't see what had happened to Josephat. That officer then brought false charges against Josephat for drug possession, gambling, and resisting arrest. Now, these were all lies. Josephat was involved in none of those things. Josephat was just unfortunate to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, stopped by a policeman who believed in the end that he could just do as he wished above and beyond the law, without any fear at all of being held accountable. Willie Kimani, here he is, a much-loved and already highly respected IJM lawyer, despite his junior years, bravely took on this case. Now, it was brave because challenging a really powerful, corrupt policeman in Kenya is risky. Willie knew that, but he chose to take on the case and pursue it alongside his courageous client. On 23rd of June, 2016, after a court appearance challenging Officer Lelyman, challenging those false charges, Willie and Josephat departed with this man, their driver, Joseph Mwiri. Now, if you follow IJM's work, you'll know what happened next. Tragically and callously, Willie, Josephat, and Joseph were abducted by the police, and they were held for a few days here in this metal shipping container. And in that container, they were tortured, and in the end, they were murdered by the police, who were ganging together to protect Officer Lelyman. These police acted with no fear of repercussion. They went out drinking afterwards to celebrate what they'd done. Now, that wasn't surprising that they acted with no fear, because actually, despite this a wave of violence and extrajudicial killing and forced disappearance inflicted by a minority of corrupt Kenyan police on ordinary Kenyan citizens, despite that plague of violence, only 2 Kenyan policemen had ever been convicted of murder in Kenyan history. So they feared no repercussion. After an agonizing few day search for the missing men, with really well-attended marches organized by the Kenyan Law Society in support of calls to either find the men or produce their bodies were found tied up in sacks and floating down the river. IJM Kenya, then in really deep mourning for their colleagues, mobilized to support an investigation to pressure for action to be taken in this case. In August, just 2 months later, five people, including four police, were arrested, and they were charged with the murder. But there seemed very little hope that there would be convictions in this case, because that's what history showed us. Benson Shimala, the country director of IJM Kenya, tells me that he thought, and many people thought, that IJM staff would just one by one quit in fear, and that they would have to close up shop, and that this would really be the end of efforts to hold police accountable in Kenya.
Verse 12 in today's passage happens to be one of the anchoring verses at International Justice Mission, and the founder and CEO, Gary Haugen, returns frequently to these words: be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer. So I want to talk briefly about hope. We're told in Romans 5 that hope does not disappoint us, and yet we can feel disappointed when our hopes are dashed, or that which we hoped for doesn't happen. I'm increasingly convinced that hope is not a feeling. I know we feel hopeful sometimes, we feel hopeful about things, but it is that very feeling of hope that can actually disappoint us when those things don't go right. So then what is hope? Cynthia Borjo, who's a contemplative teacher and a theologian, she describes hope as a quality of aliveness. It doesn't come at the end as the feeling that results from a happy outcome. Rather, it lies at the beginning as a pulse of truth that sends us forth. When our innermost being is attuned to that pulse, it will send us forth in hope, regardless of the physical circumstances of our lives. Hope fills us with the strength to stay present, to abide in the flow of the mercy, no matter what outer storms assail us. So not a feeling, but a quality of aliveness and a pulse, the life in us which keeps us going. And that is what the IJM Kenya team depended on in those 6 years. Circumstantially, we might say they had no reason to hope. What hope is there when their brother, their friend, their colleague has been kidnapped and tortured and murdered while in the pursuit of justice? So when Paul exhorts us to be joyful in hope, he's calling us to a kind of act of resistance. Resist the fragility of hope as a feeling, which may come and go, and instead trust that we will not be put to shame by our hope, because it is a pulse of truth which lives within us and which we access via deep connection with God, in whom we live and move and have our being. Be patient in affliction. Really? How? Well, I don't know, but maybe the patience in affliction comes as a result of this hope. Because unless we have hope, surely we can't attain the ability to be patient. Now, when I think of patience, I see this image of kind of, she's like a demure woman sitting at a window doing some embroidery. It's not entirely helpful. Demure, calm, accepting. But in fact, the Greek word for hope has within it the meaning of to be persistent, to refuse to stop, to persevere. So patience might require us to be still, but in an active and intentional way. And we know that Paul doesn't throw his words around, because he knew what affliction meant. In 2 Corinthians 4, 8-10, as many of us will know, he says, we are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. IJM is founded on a rock-solid commitment to prayer before everything else. Every day, in every office around the world, staff spend 30 minutes at their desk in silent prayer, meditation, and reading the scripture. It's in their contract, isn't it? It's part of your job. And then every day, at a given time, around the world, and in India, I think it was at 11, was it, morning prayer? The whole team will come together to worship, to praise, and to pray corporately for the work, in recognition that protecting people from violence, rescuing people from slavery, supporting survivors on their journey towards transformation and healing, bringing perpetrators to justice, dismantling systems of injustice, is God's work. We are invited to be a part of it.
So back to the story of Willie, Joseph, and Josephat. The police were arrested in August 2016. It would take six long, distressing years, really hard for the colleagues in IGM Kenya, and of course even harder for the families of Willie, Josephat, and Joseph. It would take six long, distressing years, adjournment after adjournment, and then COVID, and many other delays. And yet, the IGM Kenya office persisted, honoring Joseph, Willie, and Josephat daily through pursuing the case, and then annually on the at the anniversary of their passing. After 46 prosecution witnesses, 34 defense witnesses, 6,114 pages of notes typed by this amazing woman, Justice Lessett, in August 2022, three police and one civilian were convicted of the murders of Willie, Joseph, and Josephat. This was incredible. This was really not what could have been foreseen at the beginning at all. It was an incredible thing for police, senior police, to actually be convicted. So finally, the families could breathe out. Finally, IGM Kenya could thank God that justice had been done for their colleague, their driver, and their client. The civil society actors, media, the Kenyan Law Society, the Independent Policing Authority in Kenya, the Police Reform Working Group, all of these others who had really worked hard and championed police accountability in this case could finally celebrate that it had been done. And in June 2023, just a few months ago, the seventh annual commemoration of Willie, Joseph, and Josephat's deaths were held. But it was a very different affair to the first six, because the families had seen justice. And I was really blessed to be in Nairobi for that week. It was a really special, sacred time, and I just wanted to share with you a few highlights from that week. So the Law Society of Kenya recreated that march of 2016. Here's one in 2023, and I'm just at the back holding a banner. And so this march was just very, very different. I wasn't sure what to expect, of course, because there was inevitably going to be some sadness. Mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, colleagues still grieving for their lost ones. But actually, as we marched, a band struck up at the back, and we sang songs of celebration and freedom, honoring the faithfulness of God to the saints. And there was real relief, joy, determination, and a flame of hope that actually things were going to change. After about an hour of marching, we arrived at Milimani Court, and that's where the trial had taken place. The Kenyan Law Society had organized a special court ceremony to honor Willie, Joseph, and Josephat. It was extremely moving to hear the president of the Law Society of Kenya say that Willie's example had challenged him to seek justice for those who need it but can't afford to pay for it. And the president responded, publicly accepting that challenge there and then, and he invited others in the Kenyan legal profession to commit to doing the same. Justice Kamondo Kanyi summed up for the bench, emphasizing that Willie had not died in vain, and that this Mavoko 3 case, which is the name of the case, had set so many important precedents in the struggle that it actually really will pave the way to ending police violence in Kenya. But this photo actually captures the moment that most moved me on that day, listening to IGM attorney Edward Mbanga, who's honoring his friend and colleague Willie. Eddie explained what kind of man Willie was, the loving father, the caring husband, the courageous, determined, creative lawyer. And Eddie concluded that Willie's case was not in vain. His killing had reawakened a fresh desire to fight against police impunity in Kenya. And Eddie is right. I'm sure he normally is. I'm told he is. Before the Mavoko 3 trial began, only two officers, as I mentioned, had ever been convicted in Kenyan history. But emboldened by the progress of the trial over the last 6 years, between 2016 and 2022, 32 police officers have been convicted of murder and manslaughter, 32. So this really is the beginning of accountability for corrupt officers in Kenya. And I just want to emphasize again, it's a minority of officers who are corrupt. So we could see this contagious hope in the events, also other events over the course of this week. I went to Kayole Justice Center, just here, which is in the middle of an informal settlement, met this amazing woman, Faith, who's wearing a striped shirt, just standing next to me. This informal settlement has been cowering in terror for years due to police violence. I went around the room asking each of her volunteers how confident they were that they would win the battle against violence. And every single one of them said that now that they see the police actually being held accountable, they know they will win. The Mavoko 3 case really has changed the weather in Kenya. The final event of the week was hosted by IGM Kenya in a hotel in the middle of Nairobi, and this really was the culmination. Speech after speech by government officials, police, prosecutors, university academics, survivor groups, media campaigners, and others, all talking about how the Mavoko 3 case forms a platform to move to an accountable police force in Kenya. There are two memories that I just want to share with you from that event. The first is something that was said by this man, Saidi Kiprotich, who is a senior police officer in the Directorate of Criminal Investigations, who had supported really well the initial stages of the investigation. This is Saidi holding the microphone. You can just kind of see him at the back. The formal panel, which he was contributing to, had ended. And he turned to Willie, Joseph, and Josephat's families and said this: "As a member of the National Police Service and one of the team that was involved in unmasking the killers, I would like to tell the families something today that has nagged me ever since we took up this daunting task. To Willie, Joseph, and Josephat's families, I'm sorry. As members of the police force, instead of investigating who did this to you, we should have protected you. Sorry. And to all IGM staff, thank you for believing in us. Thank you for not letting this go until justice was served." You could see in the room just how powerful this apology was from a senior police officer to the families. The second thing that struck me in that event was the amazing Hannah Kamani, who is just an extraordinary, brave, and courageous woman. She's Willie's widow and mother to their two children. She has paid a huge price for this struggle for justice in Kenya. And she has shown extraordinary patience, really actively seeking justice for 7 years. She spoke bravely at the event, acknowledging the huge significance to her and other victims' families of receiving justice in this trial. In her speech, she mentioned that her son Castro wants to be a police officer when he grows up, and that her other son, Patterson, wants to be an investigator. To me, that just goes to show an extraordinary hope for change, hope for transformation of policing in Kenya that she has, that she's managed to pass that on to her sons. So this seventh annual commemoration in Kenya of Willie, Joseph, and Josephat was just an incredible week. IGM Kenya are an amazing team, an amazing resilient team, really embodying hope, and you can see it in the way they work. And we are seeing tangible examples now of that transformation. The number of convictions for police abuse of power, as I mentioned earlier. The new Kenyan president, Mr. Ruto, who upon coming to power, ordered the disbandment of the police special unit, which had been linked to so many extrajudicial killings. And I just want to end this section with a short clip of Benson Shimala, which was just recorded earlier this week. He's the country director for IJM Kenya.
Greetings from IJM Kenya. What a joy to be meeting you at such a time as this. We recognize the huge opportunity that we have at the moment to influence the trajectory of the Kenyan justice system towards full accountability for the police following the success of the Mavoko 3 case. It's not going to be easy, but we have seen encouraging signs that give us hope that God's justice will at last prevail. Before June 2016, Despite the long history of police violence against Kenyans, only 2 police officers had been convicted of murder. The system was set up to put police in a position of unaccountable, immense power over the people. And nothing an ordinary citizen could do to stand up against such power and such abuses. But in the last 7 years, since the Mavoko 3 case that sparked a national protest for police accountability, we have seen over 32 police officers convicted for murder or manslaughter, with many, many other cases in court. We have seen police leaders speaking out against police violence. In June this year, we held a commemorative event for Willie, Joseph and Josephat. At that public event, a senior police officer apologized to the families on behalf of the entire police for not protecting the 3. Moments like this give me great encouragement and hope to believe that we are at the tipping point for justice in Kenya.
Oh my gosh. William Wilberforce said, 3 things are necessary to end slavery: awareness, prayer, and money. We have been made aware today again of the colossal crime of injustice, and we've shared how prayer has brought about miraculous change. And the parish of Herne Hill prays regularly for IJM, and we are so grateful. Please continue to do so. Now, if you would like to receive more individualized prayer updates and requests covering all of IJM's work across the world, then you can sign up to become a prayer partner. You can do it online, we can help you do that, and also on the stand at the back are forms for you to fill in. Then you'll get regular prayer requests, you get answers to prayer, you're more involved in, you know, across what's happening all over the world. So that's awareness and prayer, and finally money. And again, we're hugely grateful because the generosity of the parish means that a regular gift is given to IJM. So that means an awful lot, obviously, to the organisation. And there are further programmes in Africa and Central and Eastern Europe, which IJM is now ready to begin. They are held back by funding, so they're not starting. So in addition to the gifts given by the parish, you might feel today that you would like to be an individual giver or a freedom partner with a regular donation to IJM. And again, you can be supported in that by one of us. Use the same form. Or if you wanted to hold up a phone right now, it should, I've tried it, I think, from the back of the church, you can scan this QR code. It takes you to the right place in the website. Or again, I can show you afterwards. So thank you for your love, for your generosity, and for your support. We're going to finish by praying in song, and we shared this song with you a couple of years ago. It was written by Kane Christie, who was a former IJM colleague and leader, and he opened the IJM office in Ghana. And the words are going to be on the screen, so you can either join in. I think we might have some people singing it as well. It's super simple, or you can just receive it as a prayer and watch and listen. And all of the singers on the screen are IJM employees from around the world.
Justice. Is indivisible. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
We won't relent. We will fight until the end.
We have been sent to protect and to defend.
We won't relent. We will fight until the end.
We have been sent
to protect and to defend.
Let justice flow like a river.
justice flow like a river, till only freedom is found.
We count the cost.
We will pledge our very lives. All lies in us, but the kingdom will arise.
Justice flow like a river, flow from the peaks to the ground. Let justice flow like a river.
Continue.